Welcome to the Golden Hills Podcast, where our church leaders have conversations to encourage and equip you in topics surrounding culture, theology, and the kingdom of God. Now, here's today's show.
Hey, and welcome everyone into week five of the church series. We're in week five, I believe. I should look at this. Yes, we're in week five. Study guide written by Pauline and Larry Tremel. Actually, it was Larry and Pauline Tremel. And preached by Pastor Phil Ward. And now we have a special guest crew. My office is filled with people. Some new, some old. Some older than new. But let's go around the panel today. Let's go with oldest to youngest. And I'm going to go in time served. So David Morgan.
Hello.
Everyone knows this man.
Wow.
Is this your first time on? I know that you were on the inaugural Golden Hills podcast.
Yeah, I think we did a worship arts one sometime during COVID.
We did do that, yes. All the COVID ones run together in my mind.
And I think you and I did like a staff interview one.
Yes, that's right. You're an old pro. Were you in your backyard or something?
I was in my backyard.
Okay, I'm remembering this now. Yes. Flashback. PTSD.
Sitting on the kids' swing set.
Yes, actually. Yes. Yeah. You might have been in your pool, actually, on a floaty.
Perhaps.
So explain it. What is your role here? Most people, you're going to be the second most visible person outside of Pastor Phil. So what is your role here?
So my official title is Pastor for Worship Arts. That means that I oversee all of the Sunday morning worship aspects. So from the music and the songs that we sing, even things like the technical side of stuff, so AV, all of that would fall under my purview. So
okay.
Yeah.
Good. And you've been on staff for how long?
Wow, for 16 and a half years.
Nice.
2006.
But you started attending this church.
I started attending this church in 1994.
Okay.
So a wee baby.
A wee baby. Back then. Yep. You almost had facial hair. No, you had facial hair.
I did.
Because I think in high school, you and me were the only guys.
With goatees, yes. Yeah.
we were young ones then. Bo, who does have a beard now.
Yeah.
We have three panelists today aside me, and you are not the young guy on staff anymore.
I'm not. Yeah, I've been here 8 months. Yeah, so it's I'm executive pastor for Global Outreach and Equipping. So always good to be with you, Vinny.
Yeah. I love it. And you could go back a couple weeks and get your whole bio.
That's right. Yeah, I got it there.
Yep. You are my favorite, second favorite Bo from the South.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's good.
But I think you would acknowledge who's the best Bo to ever come from the South.
I mean, if you're talking about, there's a few. Who are you talking about?
I only know two Bos who come from the South.
Okay.
Personally, I don't know the first one.
Well, are you talking about Bo Jackson?
Bo Jackson.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Like, I was thinking Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, also there's Bo Jackson.
No, I was thinking
he's
about
a fictional
that.
Character, but yeah. Yeah.
Vincent Edward Bo Jackson.
Yeah, Vincent Edward Bo Jackson.
My favorite athlete of all time.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Exceptional.
Yes. So do you agree on that? You're not.
Oh, yeah, slided. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that's great.
Yes. Okay.
Happily take number two.
All right. Good. So our third panelist, who is the newest staff member ever, and you've been on staff for a whole week?
A week, no.
Yes. Yeah. It was last week.
Today's a week.
So Matt Lavalier from the great state of Ohio.
Yeah. Buckeye.
Yes. My grandpa would not affirm that, but.
No.
Oh, he's actually you've met him too. We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
Yeah, the family runs deep on this one. Right. So, but Matt, what is your position?
Executive pastor of administration. Nice. Officially. Yeah.
That sounds very official.
It is. Yeah.
So you and Bo together kind of sit along with Pastor Phil as the three wise men. I don't know what to call it.
Yeah, two and a half. Those guys.
Two and a half wise men.
Yeah. I'm only halfway there, bro.
You're from the South. So.
No.
So the three of you guys, kind of make up, in a sense, and this is actually relevant to our conversation today, the church is an organism and it's an organization.
Sure.
From an organizational standpoint, I don't want to call it a pyramid because schemes are usually attached to theirs, but there is a sense of, there is a hierarchy in the pecking order. So for instance, like I serve the role as director, which means there's people who would sit on the flow chart under me. But then there's people who are way above me. And so I'm not on the I'm going to throw some terms out and we're going to then talk about it. I'm not on the management team, which would oversee, all the pastors and directors. And not everyone on the management team is part of the three pastors who kind of, I don't know, at the top of that. I don't even know how we would define this. If you guys, like, Yeah. Executive pastor role, like that's different than just a worship pastor who's on the management team.
It's a little different, but yeah, I got to preface it all by saying,
okay, like, let's go with you. Just, what you're saying?
Sure. It's just, yeah. I mean, you know, we all serve at the pleasure of the King.
Yes.
None of us are fit for the jobs that we have. And so for whatever reason, the Lord has set some of us in certain places to serve for periods of time in ways that are definitely beyond us, beyond our skills and capabilities. And I don't know, kind of like you look at it with a little bit of trembling and awe, mm-hmm. just being aware of, oh man, there's quite a bit of responsibility here. It's an everyday reminder of, you know, I was serious about it with my wife, Cindy. You know, the first few weeks here on the job, I would go home and I'm like, man, they're going to figure out, I don't know what I'm doing, and that's going to be the end. I think you just look at it and realize, you know, God, for whatever reason, and his sovereignty and his plan is he's called certain people out for certain things and certain times. And really you just, I mean, you got to make the most of what you have and serve humbly. So I think that's it. Even when we look at different leadership roles, whatever it might be, I think we got to remember that we're all serving the great shepherd here, and he gives different roles to different people,
absolutely,
at different times. We read all throughout the New Testament, and so we just have to make the most of those gifts that he's given.
So even yesterday, I'm exposing magic now. This didn't happen on a Friday when you listen to this podcast. But so on this Sunday sermon, though, Pastor Phil mentions, like, hey, I bear the weight of a pastor who one day is going to be called before God to give an account. Mm-hmm. And there's a sense where all our pastors are doing that. Like, I personally, as a church member, I've submitted to our pastors, and our pastors collectively are going to give an account, pastors and elders. Mm-hmm. And there's some pastors who are given greater responsibility in like, I would say all three of you guys, being in management team, you are tasked to lead the church in a different way than other pastors or directors or coordinators or staff people are. And you two guys, especially in Matt and Bo, you guys actually get to do some remarkable stuff, and God has gifted you guys in certain ways to do things that other people just can't. And that's the reality of how our church works. And I know for me, it's a comforting thing, knowing that there's guys smarter than me sitting in positions that we could. I was talking to Matt and David.
Okay, I was going to say. Okay, yes, yeah, yeah. We've known each other a long time. That's not how I
can. Yeah.
No.
So I appreciate what Bo said, but he's right in that regard of it. Kind of when you look at a traditional corporate hierarchy, there's some things that are assumed about it. And I've been in a corporate mm-hmm. hierarchy. I was in that world for 15 years. Coming over to ministry, or when God has called me into ministry, you realize sometimes everybody's perception is their reality, right? So if you perceive, hey, there's this hierarchy, and maybe you're talking about this three-headed monster of hierarchy.
I didn't use the word monster.
Yeah, right. But one thing, for me, it is very sobering in the sense that, hey, I am accountable to God for
absolutely.
This. But if we see even that portrayal of Christ when, you know, the disciples were arguing about, hey, who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom, and then he gets down and washes feet, the humbling aspect of that to me is, from a hierarchical standpoint, I just have to be the greatest servant. Mm-hmm. I mean, in that standpoint of how do I serve people? How do I lead that example of not how do I lord over people mm-hmm. positionally, mm-hmm. but that great responsibility of how do I humbly serve them, even when it's hard, relationally hard, you know, all that stuff. So it does at least give me that greater sense of humility to say, wow, Lord, I am accountable to this, to be an example of what a servant, a true servant, looks like.
So even there, and this is the difference between the church and the corporate world, while you, Matt, would be the executive pastor over, oh my gosh, what's the?
Administration.
Yeah. And so that largely has to do with finances and what that, you're not the CFO. And so that's where, like, it could, like, there's that level where it's like, well, in the world, they might equate
correct,
that.
Yeah.
But you're just like, but I'm not the boss of this place. Like, right. I'm not the chief of the finances, even though right. you kind of function in that way, but it's not.
Yeah. It's really that plurality of, hey, somebody might look to me for my opinion mm-hmm. because of my experience. But then it's to, hey, how do we collectively do this as God has called the organization of a church together? It's a team. Mm-hmm. It's a team. And so yeah. how do we value each other's input while also submitting to one another? Mm-hmm. That's a great thing that we can't do in our natural state. You know, the Spirit has to help us apply that humility, right? All of us in our fleshly state are prideful, and we want recognition for things that we do or we accomplish. So it really takes us all working together prayerfully to be able to submit to one another mm-hmm. in that degree. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So even starting off here, the sermon that we had on or the church as an organism and organization. And there's those two aspects of the church, and I think Phil did such a good job of giving a flyover of what these kind of things mean. Let's break down some of the nuances that we might not hear in a sermon and just talk about just how Golden Hills organizes, because that's something that we're not going to get. That's just not going to come up in normal conversations. And I think even amongst staff, there's always questions like, well, who does what or how exactly does this work? You know, especially if you're not in the room making those decisions, right? And so it's just good to kind of lay some of these things out and parse them out. So let's start with this. We, from the organizations that are really, or the part of the organization that are really moving things and responsible at that top level for, you know, who's in charge. It's hard using language. We're all going to use grace on terms of how we use language, but there's a sense of there's people who are in charge of other people. We're going to say, hey, our elders and our management team are the two groups of people, two groups of men who are predominantly overseeing things. And the church is probably most familiar with the elders because our members vote our elders in. Even with Pastor Phil, we vote him in. Mm-hmm. He's the only paid pastor on staff. But let's start just with the two groups of people who oversee in that regard. So let's start with you, David. You've been on what we would call the management team. Have you been on since you came on staff?
Since I came on staff, so okay. 2006.
So this is going to be the group of people that our congregation does not see in. They see them on a regular basis, but they don't see them in terms of how they function. What exactly is a management team?
So our church is kind of broken up into kind of different, it's like a tree, if you will. So there's lots of different branches on that tree. There's the administration side. There's the purposes of what we do. So the discipleship side, there's the shepherding side and the congregational care side. There's the worship side that we do on Sundays and how those things function. There's the day-to-day operations. So management team comprises of those department heads. And right now, currently, there are seven of us on that team, and we meet on a weekly basis, and we discuss, like, congregational issues or issues that we're having, like, interdepartmentally, how we can communicate better to each other, things like that. We'll make, you know, some decisions together.
So just to put, you know, names and faces to this, so the three of you are all on the management team.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, Pastor Phil is going to be on the management team, so that's
correct.
Four. So, like, the department I'm in the discipleship department. My management team representative is going to be
Josh McCullers.
So, if I have a question that needs to be answered by the bosses, mm-hmm. as we call them, not really, but I would say, hey, Josh, can you bring this up to management team? And you know, if there are bigger
That's
decisions
correct.
That need to be made,
correct.
And he would bring it, and then you guys would discuss that if it's something that needed to go to that level.
Absolutely.
So, we're not doing like every minute detail is not going up to you guys. You guys
right.
aren't micromanaging. You know, you've given a lot of people the ability to make decisions and to lead.
Correct.
But there's times where, hey, you guys need to actually be involved in that conversation.
Yeah, certainly larger decisions. I think the larger scope type things, we want to be involved in those things. Johnny Levi is also on the management team. He's the director for creative arts. Mm-hmm. And then Matt and Bo as well.
And then we have one more. We have Johnny Squared.
Yes, Johnny Moore is our... Yeah, he's our pastor for Shepherding Ministries. So like benevolence and membership, baptism, yeah. all of that.
Pastoral
falls
counseling,
his thing.
All pastoral counseling, counseling yeah. Shepherding Ministry.
Yeah, so I think that's it, right? That's the team?
Yeah, there's
okay.
the seven.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So you guys meet how often?
We meet once a week, typically on Monday mornings, and we kind of hash through some things, do some reviews of the past week, and then, yeah.
Yeah. You know, particular thing there is when things are going to involve, you know, if something comes up, whether it's a good opportunity for ministry or it's, you know, some questions that maybe somebody has, something like that. If it's going to involve a lot of different departments, then that's where we want to make sure as what we call the management team that we're, you know, everybody's communicating. I think for us, it's a healthy sign, I think, when... Mm-hmm. when people are able to thrive in their role. And that's what we want to do is just set people up to do that well. And make sure that, you know, different departments are communicating with each other and we're all really all pulling in the same direction with the same goal in mind.
Yeah. And that's probably where this becomes a merging of organism and organization, right? Isn't making sure that if you're not organized, you're not going to do a very good job of giving parameters and just giving people lanes to actually work in, right? Yeah. And we use that term like stay in your lane, like it's bad to be in a lane or something like that. But it's good to have a lane. Mm-hmm. Like I need to know what I can do and what I can't do, and I don't want to overown things and that sort of thing. So it's good to have these sort of boundaries.
Yeah. And like what you're talking about a minute ago, which is how Matt is, he has the same skills that a CFO at a corporation mm-hmm. would, but he's not the CFO. Mm-hmm. That's what sets us apart from a corporation. It's this whole idea of organization and organism. If we were an organization, then we could give to people, hey, we're looking for certain measurables, we're looking for certain deliverables that will further the goals of the organization. It just doesn't work like that here, because the Holy Spirit's the one that's at move, that's on the move, that it's the Holy Spirit that convicts people of sin, that guides people to all truth about Jesus. So those are things that we just can't dictate and we can't measure. So we're trying to work with this living organism that is also organized. So we're just trying to find the best way. So you measure success differently. You don't measure success. You can't measure it by a stock quote, mm-hmm. right? You can't tell how the company's doing based on the end of the year financials. We just have to look at how are people, how's everybody doing? How's their health? Are we all really communicating well? Are we all working towards the same vision, towards the same goals? And it's tricky. And if anybody says they've got it figured out, they don't. But it's something that we're always learning from. I think that's the big thing, is just are we always learners and good listeners as we do it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Matt, as someone who is going to have that mindset to think in terms of structures and an organization, what do you think some of the biggest, what would be the way to phrase it, like pitfalls someone could have to make it less about organization or less about organism and all about the organization?
Yeah. Two things come to mind right away is measurables. In corporate America, everything's measured. All of us to some degree have been indoctrinated on a performance management scale, mm-hmm. right? So, and it starts when we're born, we have a tendency to, a new baby was born. Oh, how long was it? How much did it weigh? That we equate that to, it must have been healthy. And then in kindergarten, restart right away with report cards that grade everything we do. Mm-hmm. And so we're built upon this. The tendency is to gauge our standard of success, and I'm air quoting here, standard of success based on our measurables. But as Phil said wonderfully this weekend, there is a visible and an invisible component of things at work, in this world and in this universe that the Spirit is doing that we cannot measure. And being creatures of measure, we consistently want to measure everything. Now, we should count certain things, because at the end of each one of those things, there's a person attached to it, mm-hmm. whether it's attendance or we're talking about a fiduciary responsibility here of the church. But, in God's hand, those measurables, all of our money here doesn't equate to a success or a measurable in what God's doing in God's economy. So I think some of the pitfalls are, and from an organizational standpoint, we count everything and we make the end of that counting success. We count that as successful if the number was large. If it was small, we say, and I think a lot of people equate that to holiness in church. Oh, if that's a small church, mm-hmm. they must be doing something wrong. They're not growing. They don't have the strategies. I don't know about you guys, but I grew up in a very small church, and if it weren't for those committed folks in that very small church, I wouldn't be here today. The gospel was presented to me. Christ called me out, caused me to believe in a very small church. Mm-hmm. And somebody will look at that and go, well, they must have been broken. They only had 65 people every weekend. Yeah. I think that's unfortunate.
And I'm even thinking about the authors of this week, Larry Tremel, who is I used his name. He was a pastor in Livermore for, gosh, how long? 20, 30 years.
How long in that? Yeah, 40. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he just faithfully pastored a smaller congregation. Mm-hmm. And just literally just he touched lives, and him and Pauline were in the lives of people for decades. Mm-hmm. And like that's the average church in America. What we do is not the norm.
Yeah, majority of those years he was the only paid staff there. Mm-hmm. So he was still able to surround himself with faithful people that he could build into. And he was able to see them grow over the years. But again, if you were just an outsider who looked and you thought, man, that guy could have done so much better if only he had done this or implemented this strategy or this technique. But man, when you get to know the guy and you hear his stories, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. he was very successful in ministry.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something where I think even if you've been a Golden Hills person for maybe longer than 5 years, like there's this, you know, you've been, when was our, I don't even want to use the word peak because it makes it sound like a, like when was the peak of our success, but when was the peak of our attendance, David?
I think anywhere, I think between like 2007, 8, 9, somewhere around there, we were close to 4,000, I think.
On a weekend.
On a weekend.
Yeah. And so in like the metrics say, oh, this is a very successful church. They're doing something right. And it doesn't mean maybe they are. Maybe we are. Right.
Right.
But that alone is not the indicator. What do they say? Correlation does not mean causation. Right. And so just because we have a lot of people coming through, I think Golden Hills has historically done wonderful things. Mm-hmm. But that shouldn't be the reason why people think we're successful. So, okay, what's happening in terms of discipleship? Is the gospel being preached? Like, that is more indicative of a successful church, that we would say. Mm-hmm. So I know I've even received comments from people in the community like, oh, wow, like, not as many people go there. And it's like, yo, it's post-COVID. No one goes to church at all anymore, you know? But that's the first question that people always ask. Oh, how many people go to Golden Hills now?
It's had a great success, man.
Exactly. Like, who's the strong, you know, what's the better church? What's going on there? And that's something that I think just so many good, healthy conversations have been happening on over the last couple years around here.
Yeah. So it shows up actually later in our church series, in the series on church health. But there's a quote in there actually from a documentary on the Vietnam War, Ken Burns' mm-hmm. Vietnam War. And so there's a retired military expert who he says the problem was if you can't quantify the things that really matter, then you start to add significance to the things that you actually can mm-hmm. count. And so whenever we look at things like church attendance, I mean, we can count that, but is that a true, that might be a measure of how the organization's doing, but not how the organism is doing. Mm-hmm. You really can't quantify church health. You can't quantify spiritual health in people. You can see it in their habits and their behaviors, but you can't attach a measurement to it. And that's what's hard. That's what separates us as a church apart from other organizations in the world is you really just can't measure that. You have to know people and observe their lives, observe how they're protecting their own lives and their own doctrine, their own witness. Because if you just add significance to what you can count, then you're going to find what you can count and think that's the most important thing.
Yeah. So as we're kind of, you know, looking at this part of the conversation, if you guys were to give encouragement to the congregation, just looking at that balance of, okay, organization versus organism, and both are important. What are some of the things that you would say, hey, rightfully think of when you look at Golden Hills, our church, rightfully think of it like this? Like, what are the things that are important? How can we continue to stay focused on the organization part aspect, but not become hyper-focused, but still pay attention to the organism? Like, what are those two things that need to go hand in hand? Because it's one of those where, and many of us have maybe been a part of those types of churches that only do one of the things well. And then it just, you know, it either becomes overly programmed because it's all about the organization, or it becomes overly organic and it totally falls apart because there's no organization, right? And what are just a couple things that people could do to remind themselves to stay focused on both, or that both are important? And I don't know if that's even the best way to ask the question.
Yeah, I'll go. So I was driving by Rayleigh's the other day. And so as you see lots of different places, people that have the, you know, different buildings around town, you see them everywhere, that have lots of greenery growing up the side of the building, different vines and stuff like that. So Rayleigh's, they have the grid work. They have a trellis for vines to grow up the side of their building. And then right below, it's just a sidewalk. And there's no planters. There's not even like dirt, you know, to plant seeds in. So I don't understand why they have those trellises there. They're beautiful trellises with nothing growing on them. And so one of the books that I really like is Trellis and the Vine by Colin Marshall and Tony Payne. So they talk about how sometimes churches can do that. The organization is the trellis, but the organism itself is the vine that grows. And so if you're all organism, but no structure, then you've just got a vine that's laying on the ground. But the same way you can be like Rayleigh's, and no disrespect to Rayleigh's, but you can have your really nice trellis with nothing growing on it. So that's why we need both. We need ways that people can grow in a healthy way. We need structures on which they can grow.
You guys got thoughts?
I think Bo put it really well. I can't, the Rayleigh's thing, yeah, the metaphor, I was just there shopping yesterday, so I don't know where his allegiances lie with grocery stores in the area, being a newcomer.
It's not a thing out here. We don't plant flags there.
Okay. Yeah. All right, good.
In Ohio, maybe it's a thing.
No, like, yeah, it is, yeah.
I think one of the things that struck out to me yesterday, or excuse me, Sunday,
you did it again. Message,
was the when he talked about the different church governances, and he laid out several examples. I really became sort of grew to even appreciate even more how our church is structured with the elder board. I think Phil laid it out really well when he was talking about how the elder board helps provide accountability for him and then for the rest of us as pastors and staff. But also I think it's important not just for his accountability, but even for his encouragement. It's lonely at the top, right? And so I think he needs guys in his life to rally around him, pray for him, encourage him. And so I really enjoy how we have our things set up. And in the fact that the congregation votes on these major things, they're voting on the senior pastor, they're voting on church budget, they're voting on these types of things to help, they're voting on the elder board to help provide accountability. So one man is just not isolated making all these decisions. We're all doing it together. It is really the family of God doing this together, hearing from the Lord and where we ought to go. And I really enjoy how we have it structured out. And we're pretty fortunate because there's a lot of churches and organizations who don't have it set up this way. And you can kind of see it sometimes in how they do things. So,
and you know, the three of us, the four of us, including you, Vinny, we'd be,
you included me.
I know. Well. We would be missing an opportunity. I think just even as Matt and I are relatively new, I think we would be missing a huge opportunity if we didn't, say that we are grateful recipients of a rich history here for that type of of governance. Just what Pastor Larry and the church at its when they you know if you go read the charter it's on the wall here. It's not the longest history by church history standards by any means, but man, it's rich. And just to look at how at the foresight and the way that I really think the Lord directed them to set it up this way, and just Pastor Larry's leadership and those in. Through those decades of leadership and how he established that culture where it really is a healthy thing where it's not just direction that comes from the elders, but it is care, like David's saying. It really is this even this camaraderie, this sense of, hey, we're shoulder to shoulder, bearing this thing together. And just for Matt and I to even be here to not mention what Glenn Evans and Phil Hill have meant for years, for decades at this church. Man, sometimes I'm just thinking in my office, like, what would Phil Hill do right now? Seriously, I really do think stuff like that. Just the legacy that those guys leave really is, they did so much of the work for us. Mm-hmm. So, we'd be crazy if we didn't give them a mention.
Yeah, I'll just shout this out to both Glenn and Matt. To have guys who are financially minded and who could be amazing public speakers. And I haven't heard you give a sermon or anything, but I've been enough talks with you during your interview process where you had to give public talks. But I know when I worked in the high school system, I would have to do a lot of financial aid training, because we did with college applications, and you go to these FAFSA things and you hear the financial aid expert, and it's like, oh my word, is this worth being able to be offsite for the day and go home early? Should I just be back in my office? So literally, and anyone who's listening who has been in that environment knows that you normally don't have those financially minded people who actually are awesome people that you'd want to hang out with and want to hear talk. And the fact that we've had two of those is unbelievable.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
We should not take that for granted.
No, I appreciate you taking the flyer on me after having only known me a few weeks, that you've declared me awesome to hang out with.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You see that? It's great.
I mean, in spite of being a Cleveland Cavaliers fan.
Yes, absolutely.
That's why I wear my Warrior shirt today, by the way. Yeah. I literally did that purposely. So,
to throw him off.
Yes, yeah. It ain't going to happen either. He's I lost two times or three times to the Warriors. Yeah. It's not going to faze me anymore.
The man is an oak. Yeah, you can't throw him off.
As we talk, let's go back to this actually before we go into the next thing. David, you brought up even how we make decisions, and Phil briefly at the end of the sermon went through like different models of church government, right? And we won't unpack all of them now because he wanted to lay a spread out there in terms of the different types, and there are different types of church government. There's not a way of doing it. Our way is more on the congregational side of things, but we're not congregational, because a true congregational-based church, they would vote on everything. Mm-hmm. If it's hey, we want to buy new pencils for the reception, does the congregation approve this budget?
That's right. And church split waiting to happen right there.
Oh my, yeah. It's are they going to be the, what's the fancy brand of pencils. I bought them once on accident. Shayla, my wife, she was like, oh my gosh, you bought these kinds? That's so awesome. I'm like, I just thought they were pencils. But there's a, anyway, it could be a thing. So we don't do that, which is good. Mm-hmm. I think it's wiser, but our congregation is involved. So one of my questions actually would be like for David, like for us, this is the, you know, our church involvement has been here for years. So this is basically what we've been used to. I've been in a church that just didn't do any sort of accountability and the church just got to spend whatever they want to spend. And we would say that's not good. I'm curious, have you guys, Matt and Bo, have you guys been in other models of other types of church governments? And obviously you don't want to, we don't need to name names if you didn't like it or anything, but just what are the positives that you see in our style of government? Because I don't think this is one of those things where people don't know what they don't know. And the way it's actually set up is really good. The way we have the congregation does vote on things, but it's more representative mm-hmm. in where we're empowering the elders to approve things and the elders empower the staff to do things. So I don't, what are some of the positives that we have in our setup?
I mean, I think that model of accountability, that mutual servitude towards one another, I think is good. The model here is actually one of the ones that attracted me being new here. Obviously I had the opportunity for 6, 7, 8 months to look at a lot of churches all across the nation that have governance in different ways. So it was nice for me to see that the way this was set up to me was a biblical model. Now we look at that and we say, well, there are lots of different ways that biblical model manifests itself in church governance, but we do have a biblical model for church governance. We have, you know, bishop, pastor, overseer, elder, all those things, the same word there in scripture. But, you know, one of the things I think folks don't realize is even if you look at the levels of responsibility for elders, pastors, bishops, overseers in scripture, it's a character issue, not an education mm-hmm. issue. It's a character issue. And one of the things on the list, if you look at Titus and Timothy, says above reproach. Mm-hmm. Who decides who is above reproach? Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it's the congregation, mm-hmm. biblically speaking. So there is a level of accountability there. Mm-hmm. We don't get to go and say, hey, hire me because I'm above reproach. I've decided I'm above reproach. No, there's a mutual accountability that says, hey, those folks around you, the congregation. So we have a biblical model, and that was really what attracted. And I think that is what, for me, is what is super helpful about the model here is that you have this mutual level of accountability that I think manifests itself in such a way that helps display servitude, what it means to be a servant, how we should be serving one another, and how watchful we are over one another, not in a judgmental way, mm-hmm. but in a way that says, hey, are you honoring God with your job responsibilities and your governance? So I think for me, that was one of the big things I really appreciate about here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think what Matt's talking about with that, it's this idea that there's no one here who is not accountable to someone, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. at some level. Mm-hmm. And so the good thing about that is that just that realized expectation that we're all going to be accountable to somebody. That's everybody on staff. All of our elders are going to be accountable to the congregation. The mm-hmm. congregation is going to be accountable to our elders, you know, and when it comes to church membership and what we're going to talk about in future weeks, yep. church discipline, that kind of thing. When that accountability is there, what it does is it opens the door for trust. Mm-hmm. Now that we know that safeguard of accountability is there, now we can start trusting one another. It's not the situation like, okay, if I want to spend $100, I have to get the congregation to approve it. Because we've got this accountability model. Questions can be asked and answered, and hopefully in a really healthy way. So that opens the door for trust, you know, to make good, informed ministry decisions that we've prayed through and you know, we all consulted people that we need to consult. And now we can go out and equip the saints for the work of the ministry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that accountability leads to trust, and I think it's really healthy.
Yeah. That literally leads in my last question, equipping the saints for the work of the ministry. One of the things that we didn't really touch on, but it's touched on briefly in the study guide, but we didn't really spend a lot of time. But in page 70, when it does talk about the organism aspect, and in the last paragraph, Larry writes, one expression of the church as an organism is found in her giftedness. And this really, the giftedness is really, it's not talking about the church as an organization, it's as an organism, which means the people and the people who all have gifts. And so for us, we would say every Christian who has the Holy Spirit it has some sort of spiritual gift. And that's what makes the church function.
Yep.
from that aspect of things, how, and I'd love to hear from you guys in your own ministries, how do you see the role of empowering people to engage in their spiritual gifts? I think it, for some people like David, it might be more tangible. It's like, who wants to play music, right? Who wants to sing in the choir? This might look different for you, Bo. You also oversee missions, which we've talked about. So there's an aspect of that there. But there might be other things that are just not the obvious, right? Mm-hmm. Like Matt, I'd love to know, like, how does this play out for someone like you? You're in such a specialty position. Like, how do we get to people to engage in spiritual gifts outside just the obvious stuff? And are there gifts that they don't even know that they have where they could be serving? And I'm not saying we need to provide a checklist here, but what are some of the things that people could even be thinking about in terms of tapping into that and saying, how could I actually serve my church and not just come and participate once a week?
Yeah. I love that that question can be a whole separate series of
totally,
podcasts.
Yeah.
But for me, the one thing that's really important, like you talk about, or you alluded to this specialization maybe, mm-hmm. For me, it's really important, even from a church standpoint, at least in my position, to be able to say to folks appropriately, are you closing that Sunday to Monday gap in your life? Meaning maybe you're not in full-time ministry. Maybe you don't have a specialized area of full-time ministry, but what's best for the church is that you're leaving on Sunday and there is no gap between your Sunday life and your Monday morning life, meaning whatever God has commissioned you to do, teacher, plumber, attorney, electrician, you're in a specialized field and you can do what I'm doing in the sense of how do you use what God has given you to give him glory and find your supreme joy in him? And so for me, it's not necessarily about, hey, how do I go through our church and find all the would-be church administrators or executive pastors? Now that could be, but I think it is for me saying, hey, there is this very specialized thing. And sometimes I've seen folks, they're in a specialized field outside of full-time ministry work and think, I don't know how to connect that to ministry. I go to church on Sundays and I volunteer in a ministry of my church, but I don't really see the connectedness of how I can go out and be a plumber and witness for Christ. It's really interesting. And I've talked to a lot of people about that. So I think for me, even though my field's a little more specialized, it helps me to be able to say to those folks who are in a specialized field, oh no, you can. You can do that for the glory of God. You can find your supreme joy in him and the gifts that he's given you. And so that's how mine kind of manifests itself specifically. Mm-hmm.
Good. Yeah. So, I mean, for me, the equipping part of my role is I think it's just that. It's one of the things that I really like the best is it's whether it's other staff or whether it's, you know, leaders within our church, whether they're on staff or not, is how can I how can I encourage them as they seek to equip others? Mm-hmm. Whether that's, you know, providing actual encouragement and how they're doing, talking with them through issues, sometimes it's being a sounding board, some critical thinking type things, analyzing what's going on with their ministry. So those are things that I really like. There are things I feel like when it comes to giftedness, there are things that I think I'm gifted at. Ultimately, and this is for leaders, this is for staff, this is just for people who follow Christ, there are really 10,000 good things that we can do. We read in Ephesians 2, you know, after the passage about how we're saved by grace, mm-hmm. not of our own work, so that no one can boast, and it says, because you're God's workmanship, mm-hmm. created in advance to do good works that you might walk in them, right? These good works that are prepared for us beforehand so that we might walk in them. So there are really 10,000 things every day that every believer could do, 10,000 good things that are out there. We might be particularly good at like 5 or 6 of them. Mm-hmm. So it's finding that intersection to where these are some good works that we could do. And here's the 5 or 6 that I really feel like when I do it, it feels life-giving. It just feels like a natural fit. Mm-hmm. So for me, when you find that sweet spot, that's where you need to abide. And so when it comes to equipping people for ministry and helping kind of doing the ministry coaching type thing, for me, that's my sweet spot because I want to help them find their own sweet spot. Like, mm-hmm. These are all the good things we can be doing. Here's the things that God may have gifted you with specifically. So let's find what that is and see how you can really thrive. Ministry is tiring, and that's whether you're a volunteer or whether you're on the paid side. Mm-hmm. It's a tiring thing. It can be a draining thing, but ultimately I hope it gives us life because we're in that sweet spot where we should be, and we can abide there and hopefully do it for years and years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. David, thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think certainly in my ministry, it's probably more physically tangible. People play guitar or people sing, and so it's easy to sort of incorporate them into the life of the ministry. But I think it goes beyond that. Like in our choir, for example, we had this person who had surgery, and so there was a lady who sings. She's got the gift of singing, but she also has the gift of hospitality and care. And so she stood up and she organized a meal train for this person. She sent out cards and would drop stuff off at this person's house and would call and check in on them. And so she recognized that somebody in the family of God was hurting. And so she could help fulfill, help bring aid to that. And so I think, you know, utilizing, finding things like that and helping to capitalize on those, I think are important. And she did a really good job of just demonstrating the spiritual giftedness that she had and modeling that for us. And so I was super encouraged in my own walk in that and had to sort of analyze, man, am I doing that sort of stuff? Am I, what kind of gifts am I being neglecting of? I didn't even know that this person had this sort of gifting. And so it was great to see that be put on display. So,
well, and I love that right there, because you're being really vulnerable in, you know, just sharing that. And I think a lot of times the congregants will think, oh, the people, like you made the comment, it's lonely at the top, right? Mm-hmm. Whether you're at the very, you know, like if you're Pastor Phil, who is, you know, going to be, you know, at the top in his own kind of way, or just on staff, right? Mm-hmm. And people will naturally kind of put you on that other side. Oh, this is the superhero Christian or something like that. And it's like, man, we're definitely not. but even there, it's like you needed encouragement. You didn't know you needed encouragement there. Since you saw someone in your choir exercise their spiritual gift, it encouraged you and challenged you, but encouraged you in mm-hmm. some ways.
Absolutely.
That person had no clue that that was happening.
Right.
And that's where it's like, it's very important if you're listening to this and you're not a staff person, which is the majority of people listening to this, exercise your spiritual gifts. You have no clue who you're going to be, not just literally helping out by doing what you're doing,
that's right.
but the ripple effects that happen there. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing. Yeah, good. Any other last words on organism and organization? We covered everything, I think it is, in 40 minutes, but I mean, it's pretty exhaustive.
Yeah, we're efficient, Vinny.
Yeah. That's why you were hired, Bo. Yeah.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, we pulled the best out of the South and the... What is Ohio? Is it the
Midwest?
Is it Midwest?
Of course.
Okay, yeah. I don't Midwest, know. Yeah. It's a flyover state for
it's
me.
It's not really West, though.
Yeah, it's not West. It's East. It's way. It should be like
Midwest.
I don't know how you throw a West in that. Whatever, yeah. Okay, I don't know about that. Yeah. I spent 3 days in Ohio once. Berlin Center, Ohio.
Oh yeah, you were about 40 minutes from me.
Really? I didn't know it, and I visited a laundromat. I was on tour, so it was very interesting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I could tell stories about that, but we won't on this podcast. Anyway, this is how these things go, Bo.
Man, your inner West Coast elite is coming at me. You actually use the term flyover state.
I actually don't use that state.
Okay.
It was.
It's home for me, man. That's all right.
And actually, I'm the only native California here, so I'm offending everyone
That's
in the room.
True. Right.
Basically, yes. Yeah. So okay. Yeah. All right. Well, with that, we'll end it. But thank you guys for jumping in. I love being able to hang out with you, and just more importantly, I love working with you guys.
Thank you.
And it's always a blast. And I think it's just so important to be a part of a staff where we don't feel territorial, and for me, that's one of the things I like the most about being on staff is it just everything feels from that organism standpoint. It's always, hey, what's best for the team? Mm-hmm. And I think we definitely have that going on at Golden Hills right now, and it's a blast. So thanks. Mm-hmm. Hey, hope everyone enjoyed this week in the series. Next week, to highlight, we are going to be talking about church leaders, specifically elders and deacons. And we've talked today a lot about pastors and elders, and why is there a difference? So that's a little lead-in for next week. Pastor Matt's going to do an awesome job preaching that. Pastor Matt Pierce. So different pastor. Now we have two Matts and two Johnnies, right? We need to be very deliberate about who we're talking about. But he will parse that out for us, and we will discuss that next week. So hope to see everyone then.
We hope today's episode was a blessing to you. Please make sure to look up and subscribe to the Golden Hills Podcast in your favorite podcast app, like Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts. And of course, you can always find us on the web at www.goldenhills.org. We hope you'll visit with us again next time.